You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Hi, I'm Raoul Pal, co-founder and CEO of Real Vision. Thank you so much for listening to the Real Vision podcast. At Real Vision, we pride ourselves on providing the best in-depth expert analysis available to help you understand the complex world of finance, business, and the global economy. If you like what you hear, I hope you'll accept my invitation to try Real Vision Plus for 30 days for just $1. Visit realvisionpodcast.com today and join us as we navigate the financial world together. Cheers.
Rising trade tensions means that your diamonds are going to become a little bit more clear.
Let's find out why.
Welcome to The Knock-On Effect. This is where we start with the thing you know and end up in a weird place. I'm Justine Underhill.
I'm Alex Rosenberg.
And today we're going to take you through trade tensions and Chinese tariffs all the way to diamonds and their clarity. And of course, we usually have Alex guessing, but for the podcast version, we will not guess. We will just take you on this journey. So the first part starts with the White House last week upped the ante in the trade wars with China.
Yeah.
Basically threatening to impose an additional $200 billion in tariffs on things like catfish and golf bags and pumice and piston engines and all the weird things that you can imagine.
Well, how am I going to clean my feet after having a delicious fried po' boy?
Catfish? Oh, okay, yes. Yeah.
My Wednesday night plans are destroyed.
This is really bad for those of you who use, and you know, you can't go golfing afterwards because your golf bags will be more expensive.
Well, I carry my clubs over my head.
Okay. So it paints a pretty good picture. Well, anyway, so China's threatened to retaliate dollar for dollar, basically becoming a trade tit for tat. Mm-hmm. But what I want to focus on here is that China has actually other ways to retaliate. So they could say, oh, we're going to impose all these tariffs on your products, but there are more creative strategies here. And so other creative ways to do it would be to weaken the yuan. So if they wanted to weaken their currency and change the price of their exports, if they wanted to, they could sell off U.S. treasuries. They hold a lot of U.S. debt. That's certainly something that they could use as leverage. They could also just refuse contracts with American companies or not buy products from American companies like Boeing. That could really hurt industry. Mm-hmm. Or they could intensify regulation. But my favorite one is that they could start to mess around with the supply chain. There's so much that's concentrated in China in terms of the U.S. relying on China for certain products that's a huge aspect of it. And so this is actually where we start to get into the first knock-on effect. So China is the major supplier of many obscure yet vital devices and materials for the high-tech sector, and that's rare earth metals.
Yeah, it's sort of the Velvet Underground of elements.
Yeah, the
obscure
the,
band yet vital to our musical.
Oh, I see. Yes, actually, that's a very good analogy.
Thank you.
So China produced more than 80% of the world's rare earth metals and compounds last year, and they supplied 78% of U.S. imports. So 78% of what the U.S. imports for rare earth metals comes from China. And actually, I do think it is worth, we can back up a little bit and explain what rare earths are.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
that's something that I know is important, but like,
yeah,
kind
like
of always
what,
forget
what exactly
is
a rare earth. Well, you can find them on the periodic table of elements. There are 17 of them. And it's funny that they're called rare earth because they're not actually that rare. They're all over the world. You can find them pretty much everywhere. But actually, extracting the materials is very, very costly. And so that's where a lot of the issue comes from. But it is hard to go for a long time without using rare earths. You'll have them in your hair dryers or your electronics. So we have a few things here. I have a few props.
Okay.
We have, it's in your iPhone. Mm-hmm. So your iPhone is polished with these elements. They extend the phone's battery life. They're in the phone circuitry. So Apple would certainly be affected.
Mm-hmm.
LEDs. So a company like Cree would be affected here too, because all LEDs contain, so especially the blue, green, and red that shines through the LCD screen is only made possible with rare earth.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we have magnets. We actually had some...
they're really on the set for the video version, which, by the way, you can watch at realvision.com/knockoneffect. They're very powerful magnets that I almost kind of, like, snapped my finger a little bit. And then we ended up breaking the magnet by accident by...
They're very delicate but very strong magnets.
Yes.
And they're impossible to separate. Yeah, as strong as you were, Alex.
yeah, I know. I was having trouble. Even I.
The mighty Alex.
Yeah.
So that's used, actually, it's funny that I didn't want that anywhere near my electronics, but these magnets are actually used quite a bit in electronics.
Mm-hmm.
They're used in wind turbines, especially, to help improve the reliability of offshore wind power generators. So GE would be affected there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, disk drives use these magnets as well. And that controls the movements of the read-write heads. 16% of the world's rare earth magnets are used in hard disk drives. So that would absolutely be affected. Companies there would be Western Digital, Seagate. And so a lot of companies are very much reliant on rare earth elements.
Yeah, it's like one of those things you don't really you don't really think about, but if it's almost like salt. Like, if you don't really think about, you know, how salty a dish is normally. Mm-hmm. But if you don't add salt, it's like the whole thing doesn't work.
My analogy was going to be thumbs. You don't realize how much you use your thumbs every day. I don't. Do you? Your thumbs are very essential. Try not using your thumbs for a day and see how difficult life is. Anyway, just like rare earth metals.
Fun homework assignment for the pod listeners.
Yeah, right. Try it out. Let us know how it goes.
Continue to wash those dishes, but thumbless.
Thumbless. Oh, well, just even using a remote, using your phone. You don't realize how key
it is. Well, hey, wait, thumbs are what you know
distinguishes human beings from the rest of the world.
Yeah, that they're opposable.
Yeah,
unlike a cat's thumbs, which is like halfway up its arm.
Yeah, that's always that's always weirded me out. Well, anyway, so yeah, try it out. Let us know how it goes.
Yeah.
But anyway, the key point that I want to reinforce here, getting back to China and their control over it, is that
thumbs. Meanwhile, I was playing poker and there was a dealer who his. Four of his fingers, like kind of stopped at the knuckle, but he had a full thumb, and he was able to pretty much do everything you could do with the hand. Like he was a poker dealer, like shuffling the cards, gathering the chips, like doing all the things.
Did you ask him how he lost his...
It didn't come up.
Okay, yeah. That makes it seem like there's like bad poker debts.
Could be.
That's very Could scary. Be. That would have scared me out of the casino.
But without the thumb.
Oh, it wouldn't have been possible.
No.
Thanks for that tidbit. You're anyway, welcome. Moving back to the knock-on effect.
Right.
So the whole point of this is that China has actually used its near monopoly on rare earth metals to basically leverage or get its way before.
Hmm.
So in 2010, let me back up. In 2010, there was a collision between a Chinese fishing boat and two Japanese Coast Guard vessels in the East China Sea. Japan detained the captain of the Chinese fishing boat, and China responded by stopping all shipments of rare earth metals to Japan.
Mm.
And guess what? Rare earth elements spiked that year. It's a pretty drastic increase. It's more than tripled. In price. And so Japan was in a really, really tough spot at that point. And so this is something that has concerned a lot of countries just in terms of, you know, will China yield its leverage or try to, you know, use its power in this one specific area? And there's actually, I have a quote here. So there's only one place outside of China where rare earth metal refining is done on a large scale. And that's by this one company in Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
And the New York Times interviewed the CEO. And what she said, her name is Miss Lacaze. She said that if there is a full-blown trade war, I can't believe that the Chinese wouldn't use rare earths as part of that. They could do it literally overnight.
I mean, that being said, if I was the only company outside of China that did rare earth metals or did anything, I would be best friends with the Chinese. I wouldn't like give quotes to the New York Times like, oh yeah, the Chinese, they think they know all this stuff. Like, I mean, I'd be, you know, a little fearful for my, you know, life.
Oh, right. She actually said that she doesn't want China to, you know, use rare earths as part of its negotiation or part of its leverage, because when it happened, the price of rare earths has been so volatile. And so that's actually really, really bad for her business.
Hmm.
Even though companies are and places are trying to use her more as a way to get around using China. Basically, what happened in 2010 when the price of these metals spiked, a lot of companies tried to find ways not to use China. So this already happened. And her business ended up going down in subsequent years. Because let's say Tesla ended up trying to find their
own rare earths.
Well, no, to try to find ways to not use as much rare earths in their products. Now, I will say it does make the cars not as fast or as efficient. So right now there is a strong drive to use rare earths, but it is possible to, you know, get around by using a little bit less. So anyway, so. I hope that I've convinced you that fears of Chinese trade retaliation would trigger rare earth supply concerns. That's absolutely something that's going on.
I buy it.
Okay, you buy it. Okay, and we already went into exactly what is going
on. What are the, just for those playing along at home, like what are some of these metals called?
Yeah, okay.
What do they look like?
Well, so it's worth looking them up because they almost look... medieval. I don't know how to describe them. Some are like really spiky and a little scary looking. So I'm gonna try not to butcher the names, so you'll have to forgive me. But neodymium is oftentimes used in magnets.
Okay.
That's what we would see in the wind turbines. Things like thanum and cerium are used to polish the iPhone screens that I mentioned.
Okay.
I hope I don't mess this one name up either. Yttrium is another fun one. That was actually used. These things are used in ceramics. I mean, there's so many uses for rare earths.
But
in coloring and as well. And actually, I just want to make a quick point. The newest blue that was made, so they created a new blue, I believe, within the last few years. And that was made using yttrium.
What do you mean? How do you create a new blue?
You can make new color. I mean, there are people that are constantly working on new colors, and so this is a much richer, more. I don't know how to describe it. It's just a much deeper, richer blue.
I saw that color that was like the blackest black, like beyond black kind of color. You remember? You ever see that? It looks like you're looking into a black hole. It's crazy.
Oh, that I don't know. But scientists have been trying to find a better way to make red. There isn't actually a very easy process for making red right now.
Hmm.
And so they were hoping that this discovery of this new blue, Crayola actually made it into a crayon. It's called It's called Blue Tiefel. They had a naming competition.
Jesus.
Sounds like one of the puns I would say.
Yeah.
Anyway, these things are used in a lot. It's just so many random places. Let me see if I have another one. Lanthanum, that extends the iPhone's battery life. It's also used in the circuitry of the iPhone and a lot of circuitry. But I would actually... So there are a few that are just very common. And actually... I'll mention some more because there has been a recent discovery this year of years and years. It was called almost an unlimited or a semi-infinite supply of rare earth metals.
Okay.
Huge discovery. This is in Japanese waters, about 1,000 miles away from Tokyo, but still within Japanese territory. Researchers found hundreds of years worth of rare earth materials. So the seabed there contains more than 16 million tons of rare earth oxides. So the equivalent of 780 years worth of yttrium, which I just mentioned, 620 years worth of europium, and 730 years of dysprosium. If any of you guys are knowledgeable about how to pronounce these names, I would.
We're sorry.
Yeah, we are sorry.
So just to track where we're going, because we're midway or more than midway from trade tensions to clearer diamonds, and the path that we've beaten is from U.S. doing something on trade, China pushing back. One potential way they could push back, either specifically, for this U.S. trade tension or just in general, as a way to flex its muscle, would mm-hmm. be to mess with the global supply chain by restricting the flow of rare earth metals. And so other countries are thinking about ways to find their own. And so we're now at the point in the story where Japan has just discovered, I feel like this is like coming back from a commercial break.
Yeah.
Japan has just discovered this
treasure trove
of Chateau Yukem or whatever it's called.
What is that?
I don't know. That's a wine, but I don't think that's what it actually is
treasure
called.
Treasure trove of all these...
Yuritrium?
Yuritrium, good. Yes. And I'm not even going to bother with the other names. So Japan is really pushing ahead with research and development to try to extract these rare earths that they've now found a huge amount of. Now, I do want to make it clear that rare earths are very, very difficult to refine and turn into the products that you want, because they're pretty well distributed across the globe. And to, let's say, go 4,000 meters under the water to try to get some of these elements is just not easy. And especially mm-hmm. that gets into environmental concerns. How does that impact the seafloor, the ocean floor, and all sorts of other
yeah.
things. But,
negatively, I would guess.
Yes.
Not positively.
I would imagine. And so that's where it's sort of like the whole idea of deep sea mining was such fantasy. I mean, we think of Jules Verne's 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Yeah, well, of course, Jules Verne, his works have all been things that have, we've since done. Whereas on the other hand, H.G. Wells, we're not there yet. So, So 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea is Jules Verne. From the Earth to the Moon, he wrote in the 1860s. Around the World in 80 Days, about being in an air balloon and all these things.
Have we done that?
Close enough.
But H.G. Wells,
Wells is your Island of Dr. Moreau. It's
Time Machine.
The Time Machine, which we haven't exactly done yet. The Invisible Man.
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of interesting? So
So you're calling H.G. Wells
either he's way ahead of his time, or he was writing fantasy, and Jules Verne was more science fiction.
Okay.
Is this relevant?
Yeah, sure.
Great.
Anyway, so now we.
By the way, if anyone hasn't read The Island of Dr. Moreau out there, yeah, that's a really good one.
Okay, I actually haven't.
It's good. Short.
I haven't read it, but I don't like scary things, so
we'll see.
Anyway, getting back to the matter at hand, mm-hmm. Deep sea mining is actually now becoming a viable reality, or at least an economic one, because it wasn't really profitable to go mining under the sea. But now a lot of potential mining sites are being tested. So there are different methods for mining the ocean floor. One is to send an unmanned rover on the ocean floor. Mm-hmm. It'll pick up or scoop up materials, bring it to the surface, and then that's sorted through on land. The other way is that some have rovers down at the bottom, and then they basically have this little, straw or conveyor belt or something to suck it up.
Okay.
You're not going to really sort through things on the bottom of the ocean floor. So a lot of it is just basically scooping things up and finding a way to bring it to the surface.
So we're not sending dudes down there with hard hats and...
No, it's not. Yeah, that would be very interesting. It's not literally taking miners. It's more in the unmanned side.
Good.
Yeah, no, that would be the least fun job, having to go to work.
I don't know, man. The commute sucks, but the job itself would probably be pretty cool.
Yeah, you get to see a lot of gold, so that's another big thing at the bottom of the ocean.
How about those crazy fish? The fish with, the light hanging from the
right,
head.
Stuff
at the bottom of the ocean is, that's...
And this is what... That's part of the big environmental concern, is that these creatures' habitats have never really been upset or disrupted quite like this.
Let's put an end to that. How have they escaped the wrath of humans?
Yeah, right. We have to find a way to get them, too. Anyway, so this... is a big, almost you can call it a gold rush in some ways, because there's so much potential there and so many companies and countries So this is not just like private companies that are looking into this. It's entire countries that has become a national matter to try to find ways specifically for rare earths.
Right, because of the concern about what China could do and China having too much power on the market. But you said they're not rare. So why are we going to the bottom of the sea to find them?
So to find deposits that
are... I mean, it's like, you know, I won't go to... What's a good example? Like, if I want to go on a hike, I'll take a train for 2 hours. But, you know, if I want to get a bagel, I'm not going to go out to Connecticut.
Okay.
Right? Because bagels are less rare.
Oh, sure. That is such a convoluted analogy.
No, that didn't simplify matters.
Yeah, that complicated matters. What it comes down to is the fact that while rare earths are scattered throughout the world and they're not that rare, finding collected or large deposits of them is, you know, so it's like...
So you can find one piece of yttrium, you know, just walking along the street, but you're not going to find enough to
actually do anything with it. And so that's why finding these large deposits of it is so exciting in some ways. Mm-hmm. But then you have to be able to refine it. And that takes many years to build up the ability to do that. And again, there's like a lot of waste that's created, radioactive waste.
Ooh.
So it's a pretty nasty business, but it has become a priority for a lot of countries to do. And so deep sea mining technology, as that advances, because countries are pushing forward with this and trying to find ways to get these rare earth metals, that's going to improve business for a lot of other companies that and a lot of other things that are on the bottom of the ocean floor, mm-hmm. like diamonds,
right?
Like gold, like cobalt, like a lot of other metals that are actually very much needed, but are a little bit more difficult to extract if you're going to go to the ocean floor to do it. And so it's almost like a side effect of putting in all this investment in mining technology that's going to help other industries that are looking to do the same thing.
Right. It's like, hey, you know, you're going to pick up the paper while you're out. Can you grab me a cup of coffee?
Okay, that's a better analogy. Analogy
is getting better.
Improved. Yes. Yeah.
You're going up to Connecticut. Might as well bring me back a bagel. That's what I always say.
No.
So there are diamonds on the floor of the.
Yes, actually, there are billions of dollars of opportunity sitting on the ocean floor.
Well, not if they're all over the place. Then the diamond price will crash.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. So there aren't. You know, it's not going to disrupt the.
It's like what happened
market.
To gold prices around the 1890s when they developed the technology to. There was an Australian technology to mine gold super effectively, and so then the supply of gold just went.
Well, that's kind of like what happened with fracking.
Yeah.
Yeah. So similar sort of thing. Well, so maybe that's something to watch out for is disruptions in the diamond market.
Don't propose to your girlfriends just yet, ladies and gentlemen.
Wait for
the plethora of undersea diamonds to
I will make a mention that De Beers still is getting in on this, and so
the prices aren't going to move.
Yeah, so
they own like 113% of the market,
right? So there's no hope of getting a cheap diamond anytime soon.
I don't love De Beers.
No, and that's actually a whole interesting story on its own. We could get into knock-on effects there.
Seriously.
As well, but anyway, so there are billions of dollars worth of diamonds on the ocean floor. Last year, mining companies extracted $600 million worth of diamonds off the Namibian coast, basically sucking them up like
what coast?
The Namibian.
Sorry. Let's see if you can do it.
Namibian. Okay. Say that 10 times fast. Sucking them up. So they actually suck them up in like giant vacuum-like hoses to get the diamonds to the surface.
So we are... I didn't know this. We are... In the present day, are harvesting deep sea diamonds.
Yes, and actually, guess what? We were mentioned De Beers. De Beers actually has a pretty good hold on this market. So they actually purchased mining rights to more than 3,000 square miles off the Namibian coast. Yeah, don't laugh at that. I said it right. In 1991, so they were thinking that far ahead. In 1991, they purchased all this basically land off the coast. And so far, they've only explored 3% of the area. So they actually have quite a ways to go. And as mining becomes more economical, as it becomes more easier to do with more advanced technology, this will certainly take off. And key thing here, so this is the final knock-on effect, underwater diamonds are among the world's most valuable. So they actually have far greater clarity than diamonds that are mined on land. And so that is why, you know, all these tensions over trade and concerns about China
will diamonds clearer.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you mentioned this, but so the same technologies that are being used and they're being developed and created mm-hmm. by the Japans of the world to mine these rare earth metals could be useful for diamonds. So yeah. So that's why it will become more economical.
Right. So it's all about getting to the bottom of the ocean floor and extracting materials. So it's all about finding the most efficient way to do that. So mm-hmm. that's really what it comes down to. And it's also finding the right locations to do the mining.
I wish we wouldn't.
Yeah? You don't want to explore the
ocean
floor?
I wish we wouldn't. I mean, do we really need more diamonds? Do we really need... it's nice that my iPhone lasts, like, 6 hours instead of 5 hours, but, like, we really need to, like, destroy a whole entire new ecosystem, like, to make our electronics, like, slightly more productive?
That's the Homo sapien way. Right, and so it's sort of like, to what end, especially...
I'm such a hippie.
Well, but it is kind of... There is a hypocrisy here because electric vehicles are a big user of these rare earth metals. And guess what? If you're destroying the ocean floor to try to get a better electric vehicle, you're not actually doing that much for the environment. So it's sort of, at the end of the day, where is the materials? Where are they coming from?
Well, maybe instead of these big sucking straws, Tesla can just use those successful submarines that were used to save the Thai children.
Oh, and apply that to the rare earth.
Yeah, why not? I mean, Musk says he can save those Thai children and take a submarine to the moon.
You can tweet at him, see if he responds to that. And so this is sort of, companies are looking for ways to recycle rare earth metals. There are other ways to go about maybe becoming a little bit more conservative over use, but it is likely that the ocean is going to be the next frontier, like it or not.
Oof.
So sort of a little bit of a bleak note to end on, but I do want to, take a step back here and talk a little bit about, why countries and companies are going to such lengths to get around China. And it's because China, over the past few decades, has really become dominant in a lot of markets. They've become almost monopolistic in certain markets, whether it's the vitamin market.
Vitamin C.
Yeah, vitamin C. What else do we know? I mean, there's so many different markets where China has almost a stranglehold.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of like the world is waking up to this and saying, oh, we actually need to find a way to get out of this, or we need to find a way to be a little bit more self-sufficient. It's funny because you look at all this narrative of U.S. needs to become oil independent. Mm-hmm. And while we were focused on the Middle East, it's sort of like China was now creeping into the picture and nobody was paying attention to that.
Right.
And so then it's sort of like...
Well, it's much more subtle because oil is much more tangible. It's like the key ingredient, whereas the things that China, so ascorbic acid is something we'll maybe talk about in a future episode, but ascorbic acid, rare earth metals, a lot of these things are very important, but not, not the key ingredient, not something that it's something that's a little more hard to think about, which right. Who knows, maybe that's a purposeful strategy on China's part to find important markets that people won't notice they're monopolizing until it's too late.
Right. And this is actually a very slow process. So the Government Accountability Office actually warned in a report that, quote, rebuilding a U.S. rare earth supply chain will take up to 15 years. And so it's a very slow process,
yeah,
but
wow.
A lot of countries and companies are jumping on that right now and making it actually a priority. And that's actually something that the White House said was a key priority, too. So this is something that's very much top of mind right now. Anyway,
wow.
Yeah.
Rare earths, top of, they're going right to the top of my mind. They're zooming ahead of the class. But previously they were like somewhere behind ferns and, I don't know. They weren't exactly the main thing I was thinking about. But now
they're
boom, right up there.
Front and center.
Well, number one.
The more you know. Yeah.
Da, 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 da. Oh, do you think that's a trademark thing?
It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, thanks for joining us for this week's Knock On Effect.
Yeah. We have a new episode up every Thursday under Real Vision Presents. And by the way, if you have any questions, comments, suggestions for future Knock On Effect, feel free to write to us at podcast@realvision.com.
Unfortunately, Alex is going to get all those ideas before I get them.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
yeah, if you want to get them to me, send them to justine@realvision.com.
Yes, and if you want to visit me, my address is 344.
I don't want you hogging all the great ideas for knock-on effect. So you just pick who you want to send it to and let us know. Anyway, we hope to see you guys, or I hope you guys listen next week. We'll be out with a new episode every Thursday.
Yes, we will. See you later.
Cool. Bye-bye.
This podcast is sponsored by Monarch Money. Are you saving to reach your financial goals? Reaching those goals isn't just about getting more money, but by managing what you have. And the best way to manage your money? Monarch Money. Monarch Money is a new kind of finance app that's intuitive, powerful, ad-free, and takes the headaches out of budgeting. Try it free when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. Monarch puts all your accounts, investments, transactions, and finances at your fingertips. With a complete view of your finances, you'll gain insights on your spending and find new ways to save. Plus, Monarch lets you customize your dashboard, collaborate with your partner, set custom budgets and goals, and track your progress toward them. See why Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it, and why the Wall Street Journal named Monarch Money the best budgeting app overall. Get a 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. That's monarchmoney.com/podcast for your free trial. monarchmoney.com/podcast.